This morning we're going to be discussing our gospel lesson for today, the widow with the two mites. And so this is our annual pastor's going to talk about money sermon. We never announce this beforehand because we don't want you to skip church when we talk about money and offering plates and things. So the story, if you notice, is kind of a people watching story. It's a people watching story. The setting is Herod's temple. Herod rebuilt the temple after it had been destroyed in 20 BC, and it was the most magnificent building that most of these people had ever seen. Outside of Rome, it might have been the most magnificent building in the world. And Jesus had been in this crowded, noisy temple area, arguing with the religious big shots all day, the Pharisees and the Sadducees, and he was tired out. And so he came over, sat down on a bench near the side of a wall, as you would kind of sit on a bench in a museum after you've been walking around for a while. And it was a great place to people watch. A lot of interesting folk walked through that area. And according to my research, on this one wall in that temple that Herod built were 13 different offering boxes. Big metal suitcases with metal slips over the top. And in many cases, from what I can tell, it looks like there were signs that said what you were giving for. Like if you wanted to give to building renovations, you could put coins in that metal suitcase. If you wanted to give to the poor, you could put coins in that suitcase. And so it was kind of like designated funds in a church. You came and you gave your mites, you came and gave your coins, your gold, but you got to put them into different buckets. And as Jesus and his disciples are sitting there and they're watching this kind of thing, it was jammed with people who were kind of making a show of it. And so Jesus watched as people in fancy robes with proud looks on their faces approached the boxes and put their coins in. You can always tell a rich man by their shoes, at least that's what I like to say. And many of these rich people had some of like the finest sandals in the world. And these big metal boxes, when you would drop your coins, and of course, they would ring out. And so if you dropped in little coins, you would hear a little clink. But if you dropped in big coins, you would hear a big clank, clank, and if you put in lots all at once, it sounded like a slot machine, which if you were rich and you were religiously proud, that sounded pretty good to you because people would look and people would notice you and people would think you're really, really spiritual. And that felt good. And Jesus thought it was absolutely funny. He couldn't help himself. I'd like to think Jesus nudged his disciples and smirked a little. Like, watch this character. You know he's going to use a little wrist action. Like he's dunking like Shaquille O'Neal. That's what I imagine Jesus said to his disciples. And his disciples probably said to him, we don't know who Shaquille O'Neal is. It's like, and Jesus says, oh, you will. I just know all things. Pharisees, Sadducees, the rich, the rabbis, they all did the same thing. According to Jesus, it was all a show. It was better than theater. It was better than going to the theater. Well, then came in an old, little old lady. And no one noticed her but Jesus. And she was almost invisible in this busy, noisy crowd of important people. She was probably humped over a little bit, wearing a brown skirt, a brown blouse, brown apron, brown shawl. All she could afford were brown things. And this, as she's kind of walking along with her cane maybe she was checking for the cracks between the stones because those were like a tripping hazard to somebody like her, and there was nobody to help her. And she got up close, you could tell that her purse was largely empty. And when she pulled out her two coins, I liked our translation today, it said she put in two pennies. Two mites, not like silver dollars, not quarters, not even nickels. All she had was two pennies. It's all she had, and she put it all in. No excuses, no thinking about herself. She didn't even know where the next coin would come from. It didn't matter. She did it for the sake of God's kingdom, and she put those coins in. And Jesus suddenly whispers to his friends, and he says, do you see that lady over there? She is generosity. She is generosity, guys, because she gave from the abundance of all that she had. And all these other people had abundance, and they gave but a pittance of what they had. And that little old lady, she gave from the abundance of her heart. And in God's kingdom, he can do more with those two pennies than he can do with the dollar bills of the rich. Because she gave everything she had. That's what generosity looks like. It looks like her. And in the New Testament, there's four particular pictures of what generosity looks like. This lady's one of them. The first story is the story of Zacchaeus. And if you remember Zacchaeus, he's the short little chief tax collector who's cheated a bunch of people. Until Jesus comes to him and says, I'm going to your house today so we can play Nintendo. And Zacchaeus' heart is moved that a rabbi, an important religious rabbi, would even care about him. And his heart is moved maybe by the sermon that Jesus had just taught. And he decides that he's going to give away his money. In fact, he's going to pay back everybody he's cheated, and he's going to give them more. And not only that, but he's going to get half his other possessions, and he's going to sell them all and give it all to the poor. And the thing with that story is why that's so generous is when somebody who's rich like Zacchaeus has the change of heart, he can change a whole village. He can change a whole town. He was the kind of guy that had enough money to build an entire orphanage by himself. And Jesus got a hold of his heart. That's example number one. Example number two, Barnabas in the book of Acts. Barnabas had a piece of property. We don't know if he inherited it or exactly how he got it, but he had a piece of property, and then he sold it, and so much money came back that the entire church of God was celebrating. And he gave the whole thing over. He got such a high bill of sale, he didn't even think about keeping it for himself, though. He still just gave it all to the church. And the church celebrated this gift. Third example, the church in Macedonia. This congregation is described in 2 Corinthians, which is kind of like a classic passage of the New Testament on generosity. And they use these words of the church of Macedonia, enormously generous, or sometimes translated rich in generosity. And it says it about the Macedonian Christians five times. Rich in generosity, rich in generosity, rich in generosity. They were the example church. And the fourth great example of generosity is the widow with the two pennies. Now, what was this little lady's name? Anybody remember? Because the Bible doesn't even tell us. That's what's kind of funny. This story is there, and it's this great example, and Jesus recognizes her, but nobody even knows who she is, and we still don't. We still don't. And maybe that's the beauty of the passage in a way. She's one of the most generous givers in the Bible, and she's done this great spiritual thing, and Jesus recognizes her, but guess what? She doesn't even get the credit. She doesn't even get her name in the book. And we know the name of Zacchaeus and Barnabas. We know about the church in Macedonia, but we don't know about her. She was in stark contrast to the religious elite of that day. We know who all of them are, but we don't know who she is. The Sadducees and the Pharisees, they were active in their churches. They were dressed to the nines when they went to the temple. They were good moral people on the outside, but they were tight-fisted with God, with what really mattered. With a spirit that was kind to those who were lowly, with hearts that were really generous with other people. They had good incomes. In fact, the rabbis and the priests, they were some of the richest in their society. But we know about how much they gave. They gave 2% of their income. Why do I know they gave 2% of their income? Because the average churchgoer who's pretty moral and shows up to church every week gives about 2% of their income. That's why I know it. Because that's kind of where we are. And Jesus, he talks about money as much as any other subject. In fact, Jesus describes money more often than he talks about the specifics of heaven and hell. If you want to know the topics Jesus talks the most about, he talks about religious hypocrisy. He talks about salvation, which includes forgiveness. But the third most topic that he talks about is money. In fact, out of the parables, 11 of his 39 parables are about money. 30% of his parables are about money. And I think, why does he do this? Because he wants you to squirm. He wants you to feel uncomfortable because he knows, like, when it comes to certain topics, don't talk about politics and don't talk about my money. because he knows it gets personal. He knows it's about security. He knows it's something that we're guilty of because we're all greedy. But he wants to take that away from us, so he talks about it all the time. He also knows something else, that when people are generous with the world around them, the world takes notice. Because the truth is, outstanding generosity is shocking in a sinful world. Rabid, wonderful, abundant generosity is shocking to the world around us because they're not used to seeing it. They're not used to seeing it. And maybe they've seen somebody like Warren Buffett who's got so much, do the Zacchaeus thing and give a lot away at the end of his life, but they're not used to seeing average Joes give abundantly. They're not used to seeing middle America say, you know what? I know other people could do them more, but I'm going to do what I'm going to do. I'm going to help. They're not used to seeing Christians with good jobs take Saturdays off to go help and build houses. When they see it, they're shocked. Because white-collar people don't usually do that sort of thing. But it's shocking and it makes a difference in the world. In fact, if you want to go back and look, even in Roman times, they talked all the time about Christians and how shocking they are. Let's look at Plato. You know the philosopher Plato. So this is before Christian times. Plato, this is what the Romans thought of the poor. This is what the Greek philosophers thought about the poor. This is what Plato wrote. He said, "A poor man who is no longer able to work because of sickness should be," read this, "left to die." That's what the Greek philosophers thought of the poor, of those who were sick. If you're not useful anywhere, we just want you to die and go away. If you can't produce and take care of yourself, you deserve to die. That's what the Greek philosophers thought. And these are some of the most moral people in their culture. And then Christianity comes along a little later, and we're suddenly taking widows and orphans in, and they think we're crazy. Why would you do that? Don't you know what happens to people that go to adoption agencies? Their lives don't work out. And Christians are like, well, then we'll build our own. And we'll build our own orphanages. And we believe their lives can change. The fate hasn't been set out for these people. Give them the gospel. They can change. Here's another one. This is the Roman philosopher Plautus. He shares Plato's view of the world. He says, "You do a beggar bad service by giving him food and drink." Now, some of you might say, when you give a stack of cash to a beggar, they're just going to go like buy booze and drugs with it, right? He's talking about just food and drink. Like giving them a hot dog. He's saying, like, if you give them food, you're doing a bad service. Why are you saying that, Plautus? Because you lose what you give and you prolong his life for misery. Like, he just wants him dead. Just euthanize the guy. Here's another one. This is the most interesting. This is a pagan emperor. This is Julian observing the Christians in his time. This is Emperor Julian. He attempted to lead the Roman Empire back to paganism. He wanted to get rid of all the religious stuff, all the Christian stuff. He was frustrated with superior morality because he thought sometimes when you're too moral or you're too generous, you keep too many poor and weak people around. So he didn't want that. So this is what he said. He readily admitted this. He says, "These impious Galileans, they relieve both their own poor and ours." And then he concludes, "It is shameful that ours should be so destitute of our assistance." He's saying they don't even just take care of the Christians. They take care of the Roman orphans too. And the Roman poor too. And the Roman widows too. Julian's just shocked by the generosity of the early church. Let me sum it up this way, because this is how I like to think of Christian generosity. I have kind of three rules or three areas, three points of focus that I think are important. This is how I like to talk about generosity. Number one, I want you to give as a response to God's grace, which is to say there's no guilt trip sermons. I would love to be able to give you a guilt trip sermon. I'd love to be able to sell you indulgences, trust me. It'd be fantastic. Rome got so wealthy off this stuff. That would be wonderful if I could do that. We'd make a lot more money. But the problem is it's not biblical and it's certainly not Lutheran. You give as a response to grace, you don't give out of guilt trip. It's just how it is. Jesus makes it abundantly clear. And so it'd be far more effective for me to like get a pitchfork and say, this is going to happen. You got to put more money in the offering plate. It's just not Christian. It's not what we're about. The law doesn't change the heart. See, Luther was so clear on this. He goes, the law won't change your heart. The law will tell you you're guilty, but it can't change your heart. Only the gospel of Jesus Christ can change your heart where you do good because you just want to do good. A response to God's grace. It's the only way I'm allowed to talk about it. Number two, know what you give. And I think you need to pray as a family about generosity. I think you should want generosity to be something that you're known for. Not necessarily by others, but something that you know yourself for. You should want to live as a generous person in this world. So know what you give, be intentional with what you give, and I think you need to pray as a family about this. And then number three, you need to grow what you give. You could try a percentage a year, you could try a dollar amount a year, you could pick a special cause, you could give to a building fund, whatever it is. But you need to grow what you give. And I think this is an important part of life. I have known people in my pastoral ministry who were 10% tithers their whole lives, and when they got closer to the end of life, they just said, you know what? We just decided that 10% sounds like a rule. We don't want to give to a rule. We want to go above that. So we decided to grow by a percentage each year. And one of these couples that I knew, they were giving now 22% of their income. And they said, the funny thing is, at first it seemed a little risky, but that's the thing with Christ. If it's not a risk, it ain't worth doing. So he said, Pastor, we prayed about it. We just decided we wanted to grow in this way. And to this point, we've never had to say to God, we can't grow this year. To this point, we've been taken care of. We've been good. Our life has been good. And I thought, I love that. And so I would encourage everybody, you might be at a point where you're giving a lot, and man, God have mercy on you. You're awesome. I love you. That's amazing. But if you ever say to God, I don't want to grow in some way in sanctification, whether it's generosity or any other area of your spiritual life, God wants you to grow, and he wants you to grow in your giving. And again, this is the problem with Lutheran doctrine. I can't like guilt you into giving a sermon. I'd love to say and sell you indulgences. I'd love to pay off the church building mortgage. That'd be fantastic. You'd feel good. You'd get years off purgatory, or your grandmother who was kind of mean to you. Like, we could spring her from purgatory right now, right? That'd be fantastic. I mean, she was a cuss. Not my grandmothers, by the way. They were both sweet ladies, but your grandmothers, I know. We could spring her right out of purgatory, but the thing is, that's not true. It's not a real thing. It doesn't work that way. In fact, the problem is, it's not why we give. We give in response to God's grace. And there's nothing you can do to make God love you more, and there's nothing you can do to make God love you less. If you have faith in Jesus Christ, you're good. Heaven's a free gift. You have no need for the offering plate unless your heart says, I want to give. And again, the guilt trip sermon would probably get more money, but it would make the world a worse place, and it'd make heaven a worse place, and I don't want to be a part of that. This is about heart change. When I think about heart change for me, I was reminded of something that really changed my ministry when I was younger. It was a pastor, an older pastor named Eugene Peterson. And our Bible lessons today, you might have noticed, our Bible lessons were from the Message translation. The Message translation was written by Eugene Peterson, and they had his funeral this week. And it was a huge affair. It was being sent all around the world. It was being live cast all around the world, live streamed around the world. Tens of thousands of people watched the funeral live. It was kind of an experiment because the church where he had belonged the last 15 years was a small Lutheran church. And so to get in, you had to be invited. Like, too many people were going to come. So they went with this live stream idea, and it really seems to work. I got to watch the funeral online. It was incredibly moving. And I love Eugene because in all his years of ministry, he spent 29 years at the same small church, and he loved his people. And over time, he realized a lot of them didn't seem to understand the Bible, and so he decided to translate the New Testament into a very free translation that just sounds like a mom just talking with her kids, which is that's kind of in like the temperament of what Luther did with the German Bible. That's what Eugene did. And he did the New Testament. It was so popular that he had to translate the Old Testament. And at one point, it was the best-selling Bible in the world. And suddenly, Eugene Peterson is speaking all around the world at big conferences and everything. But he never leaves that small church. He just stays there, and he pastors them, and he loves them. And he became this huge, huge deal. And I remember I went to a church conference, And you had all these amazing upfront speakers. You had these bands that you would know all their music and everything else. But the thing I got the most out of was a small group session. After the large group thing, you were able to go to small groups. And I got to be in a room, maybe 50 people, and got to speak to Eugene Peterson just kind of sitting at his foot like he was in a living room. He was sitting like in a rocking chair in there. I don't know where they got a rocking chair to put in the church, but they put it in there for him, probably because he was old. That was a joke. And so this old wise pastor's just sitting there, and he's just talking to us about the life of a pastor and how you love your people and what your prayers need to be about. And I'm going to tell you something, it was wisdom. And for all the flash and the smoke and all the lights and all the loud music and everything else that happened at that conference, the best thing I did was 1 hour with Eugene Peterson just telling me about the life of a pastor. And this week at his funeral, his son had to preach his funeral. And his son, that's his son right there. And it was an amazing sermon. But he had two images in the room. The one is the wooden casket that his 6 grandchildren carried Eugene in on. And then the other thing, you don't see it on the screen, but it's just off to the left a little bit, was a wooden cradle that Eugene himself built. He built a wooden cradle for his children, and all his children were raised in that cradle, and then his grandchildren were even raised in that cradle. And his son tells the story, and he says, my dad built this cradle, and he said there was one imperfection that he couldn't quite get right. It had like a seam. It was almost like a crack. He couldn't quite seal it right, and he was disappointed in that. His son checked the cradle many times, could never find what the imperfection is. But his dad would like give him a little mini sermon on it, and he'd say, here's the thing with the cradle. It's kind of like us. Think about St. Paul in 2 Corinthians when he says, we are like clay pots and we're cracked on all sides, but we're not broken because we have the message of Christ inside of us. He goes, that's what this cradle's like. It's got a crack, but it's okay because it holds something precious inside. And he goes, my dad would tell that sermon to all us kids and to all the grandkids about that cradle that held him. And then this week when I was having to prepare the sermon, and I wasn't sure what to say, instead of writing a sermon, I just thought about that cradle, and I decided to build my dad's casket. And so he spent last week building his father's casket in his own garage. And he finished it up with 6 rope handles so that the grandchildren could carry him in. And he goes, here's the thing with the casket. It also is imperfect. It's got these cracks in it. And it holds an imperfect man in it who gave his life to the ministry of the church, gave his life to his people, but at the same time was imperfect. But he had the message of Christ inside of him. And so like this casket, we see death, but if the message of Christ is in there, all we need to see is life. This was the core of the sermon. It was so beautiful. It was all about 2 Corinthians 4. And I want to close by reading 2 Corinthians 4 to you, but I want to read it from the Message translation. Because this is how Eugene Peterson decided to write this. This is how he decided to translate this. He said this, if you only look at us, you might well miss the brightness. We carry this precious message around in the unadorned clay pots of our ordinary lives. That's to prevent anyone confusing God's incomparable power with us. As it is, there's not much chance of that. You know for yourselves that you're not that much to look at. Isn't that funny? But what a great image. For all our imperfection, for all our cracks, what God does, though, is he just keeps filling the clay pot with his grace and somehow even uses some of those cracks to let that grace leak out to others. And that's the image that Peterson left with me, and I think it's the image of generosity I want to leave with you. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, amen. Let me invite our ushers forward at this time as we take our offering.